Yeah, but I'm trying to do the date. The ninth, will please come to order. Let the record show that Representative Locker, Representative Samansky, Representative Phillips, Representative Abood, Representative McBride, and Representative Herman are in attendance, along with the chairman of the committee, Betty Cato. It seems like we have a couple of tardy people today. Mike W. Miller will be here shortly. He had to run to his office or something. And the individual that we intend to interview this morning seems to be a little bit tardy. Actually, it was basically the commissioner himself that we wished to talk to, and no one else has signed up. I am in a quandary, really, as to exactly how to handle this. But I think one thing that we'd like to do, and that is that Barbara has given me some background. I wonder if you could get another camera. That Representative Locker has given me some background on, and she'll give you all some background on, has to do, and we can discuss this, the railroad, the train tragedy that occurred at Wasilla just recently. If you will look at her backup, and Representative Locker, would you like to speak to this just now, even though you will be speaking to the commissioner also about it?
Actually, I thank you, Madam Chairman. I've asked the chairman for just a few minutes of the committee's time, and I don't wish to put the new commissioner of DOT on the spot, but I'm going to have to ask his indulgence and the indulgence of this committee, because we have a matter of extreme importance in the Mat-Su borough. As you can see, we've had two more people killed at a railroad crossing that has been known to our community to be very, very dangerous. We have lost several people in the last few years, and as many of us look back can remember when we were not so heavily populated, still bad accidents and people killed. But because we have so many more people using that road, it seems to be a regular occurrence. Now, in following up, my first suggestion to my staff was, if it's a problem with money, let's just introduce a bill for a special appropriation. Well, Joni, my aide, did some investigation, and because of her work, she was able to find out that, number one, there has been a contract already signed with the railroad and DOT to provide railroad lights at this crossing. However, they have not done it because Department of Transportation has requested that they hold back because DOT plans on improving this railroad crossing in the next year or so. But the Alaska Railroad is prepared to go ahead and put in those flashing lights, and all they need from the state of Alaska, Department of Transportation, is power, some sort of power, either temporary or permanent. But what we are doing while this is lost in the bureaucracy is people are getting killed on a regular basis. And what I'd like to ask the commissioner today is for him to take this material back to his office and figure out somehow how he can get power to that crossing so that the Alaska Railroad can immediately put in the flashing lights. They are prepared to even pull people off another job to do it. They are prepared to do it tomorrow if there is power to that railroad crossing. There are three extremely dangerous crossings. However, the one where most of the people are getting killed is this one. And this is the one where there is already a contract in place and there's already funding in place. So I know we have a new administration and I know we have a new commissioner, but I don't think that as a representative from that community that I can let them wait another day. And I'm just asking for your support.
All right. Thank you very much, Barbara. At the present time, inasmuch as we're still waiting for the commissioner, I do have with me, and we can go on to the rest of our business having to do with the resolution that we discussed at our last meeting. The HCR 2, of which the prime sponsor is here, having to do with space available basis. According to instructions, staff drew up a draft defining space available of a letter of intent. We find that to put it in the bill could very readily be discriminatory. And to put the word Alaska citizen in the bill, so we have drafted a letter of intent. And I'd like all of you to look at that at our last meeting, at our meeting Monday. I think we came to the conclusion that with the letter of intent that we would be in good shape. Representative Grusendorf, would you like to read that letter of intent? Would you like to testify?
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. The last time we met, we had a lengthy discussion in relation with extending the free travel of senior citizens aboard the shuttle ferries to 75 more days. I noticed that your letter of intent, your definition is on a space available basis in the context of this resolution requiring passengers so traveling to be on standby until all paying passengers have been accommodated. Passengers would not be allowed to receive confirmed reservations unless they are paying passengers, and would not be allowed reimbursement in the event that they purchased tickets and were later able to travel space available. I think, Madam Chairman, this basically is a good definition of space available. It also takes care of some of the administrative nightmares that may occur in the fact of a senior citizen deciding to buy a ticket, and then when there's space available, turning the ticket in. I think this would be asking too much for the administration on the ferry system to have to handle that type of booklet. At the same time, a senior citizen, if they really must travel on that day, simply could buy that ticket and travel. I notice here by some questions asked of Ron Lynn that he, in relation to definition of space available, that the only time that the vessels were filled were during the Haines Fair.
Yes, Representative Grusendorf. Also, there is the situation with the Bartlett and Prince William Sound, of which I am very, very familiar. And it is rare that people during the summer actually do the traveling between Prince William Sound or Cordova and Valdez unless they take their vehicles, because generally they're on a way to go somewhere. Over the years that I have been familiar with the ferry system there, there isn't that much interaction between Whittier, Cordova, and Valdez as far as the thing that we're looking at here. So I see this as a problem with anyone who wished to do it. However, I don't see it as a problem impacting the entire system. I think the real problem is in Southeast, and I don't see this problem occurring in the, and I do recognize very thoroughly that ship does travel 7 days a week all summer long and is very definitely crowded and virtually sail continually with the full roster during those months. Do we have any comments on the letter of intent? It is my intention to move this bill out today.
Representative Boone. Chairman, I want to clear up something in my own mind here. passengers would not be allowed to receive confirmed reservations unless they are paying passengers. So that tells me that we've got a paying passenger. We have a paying passenger. Let's assume that passenger paid. Would he not then still have reservations if he paid? But would not be allowed reimbursement in the event that they purchased tickets and were able later able to travel space available. So you've got a person standing in the line and he says, I've got a ticket. I can't hardly see where he's going to stand there with a ticket in his hand because he paid for it, he's made reservations, and wait until all of the paying passengers go on. And then he says, well, now I can go space available and hang on that ticket and get aboard and go space available. It just kind of confuses me on this thing because I can't see somebody in reality doing it. If you're paid for it, you're going to get aboard, period.
Yes,
or you're not going to get paid. You're not going to buy a ticket. You're standing in the line waiting to see if there's space enough for you. So I don't know what this last sentence really
implies. Oh, well, what the last sentence in my interpretation implies is that if a person has a reservation, they don't stand in that line. They get aboard the vessel.
I can understand that.
And it precludes them from taking a space available space, which might take it away from someone else. So consequently, having had a paid reservation, they don't stand in the line. And I think what you're saying, Mitch, is would somebody stand in the line hoping that they have space available and therefore save the amount of their ticket? Representative Locker?
Probably what they would do, rather than stand in line, Madam Chairman, is in order to be sure they had passage and they were a senior, they would buy their ticket. But once on the ferry, finding out later that it's half empty, say, I could have traveled space available and cash in their ticket for money back, which would then cause a great strain on the administration. All we're trying to accomplish here, I believe, is ensuring that, like Representative Booth said the other day, people would not block out, seniors would not block out a space and get reservations without paying for it in advance, just block it out, and then when they got up there, be free passengers and people with money standing on the shore. So this does both these things, and I think it's properly drafted.
Representative Grusender?
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I was thinking of something that may come up right now on the program that we have for senior citizens on the ferry service. They can call up during what we classify now as the off-season and inquire as to whether or not there's space available. And they can, let's put it this way. On the smaller ferries, they don't take reservations, to my knowledge, unless it's a special thing that has happened, like a land sale in some communities such as Tenneke, or maybe the fair itself in Haines. But overall, on these ferries that we are talking about, there has not been a problem. However, I wonder if this letter here, well, I guess as it stands, it would be good. I was just concerned that we're extending the time 75 days from May 15 through September 1st. I wonder if that should not be in that definition, saying that the committee intends that during the period between May 15 September 1st, October, I guess it is, October 1st, that space available would be defined. Because right now we have a program in place that's operating, they don't have a problem with it.
Right. Representative Phillips?
Ben, I think it's implied. I mean, this letter, it says a letter intended to accompany HCR2, and if you look at HCR2, it's dated there as far as the, unless you had these two sheets of papers separated, which I doubt that the DOT will.
Madam Chairman, I was just afraid that it may be then taken over to the other areas where we haven't had a problem yet.
I would entertain a motion to adopt the letter of intent. Representative Phillips?
Madam Chairman, I move that we adopt the letter of intent to accompany HCR 2.
Is there objection? If not,
I'd just like to ask one question. I don't, if I may, Madam Chairman.
Yes, please do.
I think I have a little problem that he was getting on a letter of intent. When you wind up HCR 2, it says that, during every month of the year to permit them to travel. It doesn't say anything about the additional months there, only in the whereas. So, and during the winter months, people do go, senior citizens get together in groups and plan a trip, like to Haines or from my particular town and things like that, or to Sitka or something like that for various reasons, maybe display bridge on the way up and on the way back. And I just would want to be sure that this covers that before. That, in other words, this HCR 2 only covers the months between that are mentioned there. May 15th to October 1st. I wonder if there could be a sentence put in there, because otherwise there's not a problem, but if we put the letter of intent in here, then it becomes a problem for those months that are now being, they're able to do that. They can make reservations. And they can go. I don't know if they make reservations, but they know the time is available where they can plan that 15 people can go on this particular ferry.
What's the will of the committee? I don't see it as a problem, Representative McBride, in as much as the letter of intent is addressed to the merely 3 months, and they already have that prerogative during the statute that is already present. Representative Brewster.
I'm inclined to agree with you, knowing what the passenger level is on the ferry service at that particular time. I've ridden on that ferry when the big vessel, which are probably 20 of us on that vessel coming from Sitka to Juneau, and it's like riding on a ghost ship.
Okay. I'm satisfied with that.
You didn't ask me unanimous consent. So we will vote on this. Let the record show that Representative Davis and Representative M.W. Miller joined us. We are voting on the letter of intent to HCR 2. All those in favor signify by raising the right hand. Left. Opposed? Motion carried. I would now entertain a motion to move the bill out of committee. Representative Davis has moved to move the bill out of committee. Is there any objection? Would you like to ask unanimous consent?
Certainly. Just for the purpose of clarification. Yeah. Ben, are you satisfied, and also McBride, on the way it's written?
I do not feel that there will be a problem with this letter of intent, knowing what is happening on the ferry system.
All right, is there, there being no objection then, the bill is accepted, passed out of committee. And thank you, Representative Grusinger, for
attending. Thank you, Madam Chairman, and members of the committee.
In the rear one.
I just want to make sure. We're district.
I do want to thank all of you for the attention to coming to committee meetings. It's just absolutely great to have a full committee, and we've had a full committee every time we've met. We will start meeting on Tuesdays and Thursdays when the necessity arises. I believe our next schedule next week does call for that. And we need more bills in the committee. although some of them are going to be extensive. When we finish signing out, we'll call on the commissioner. Oh, I want you all to know that I did get a gavel. However, because I just like pounding on tables or makes grooves, I brought my own piece of marble. They did praise us with the gavel.
I knew all the girls would like that.
Well, I got the piece of marble idea from you, Mitch.
Are we at ease?
Well, we can be at ease for just a jiffy if nobody leaves.
I'll go for a cup of coffee.
As soon as Randy pours his coffee with the committee.
Yeah, that was a good evening last night, by the way. I really enjoyed that.
What'd you eat?
Not everything in sight.
You're lying. I ate really a piece of chicken.
Matthew, you know that leg of lamb?
Was there a leg of lamb?
No.
All right. Would the committee please come back to order?
Okay.
At this time, I would like to introduce to you Commissioner Dan Casey, the Commissioner of DOT. I did make a statement to Mr. Casey, and that is that we would not put him on the spot too thoroughly, in as much as he was sworn in just a week and a half ago, and very possibly does not have his organization complete. However, I feel quite sure he'll be able to field whatever questions you do have. Representative. Boy, I want to make representatives out of all these commissioners. Commissioner Casey, would you care to join us at the table?
Well, I'd be honored to join you as a representative or commissioner, whatever you please.
More pay, right?
We'll open this meeting or open this discussion. Is there people who would like to ask the commissioner various questions? Perhaps we should open it with a brief overview of your background and then go on to questions from there. How's that? Mm-hmm.
I was born in Pasadena, California, and was never raised. I moved around the country quite a bit, coming to Alaska in 1968 with the Forest Service in Fairbanks. Spent a year at the university, subsequently lived in Fairbanks. Lived in Fairbanks, Kenai Peninsula, Juneau, and Anchorage. The last, I guess coming to Alaska as a smoke jumper, I started out with the Bureau of Land Management in Fairbanks and subsequently worked in the construction industry in the Cook Inlet for several years. I spent about a year here in Juneau laying a couple of legislative committees for the House at the time that Dean Guest was the speaker. Led the charge for both the House and Senate and the congressional delegation, working with the various companies who were applying for domestic satellite certification to serve the lower 48 in Alaska, trying to encourage a competitive interest on the part of all the applicants to the FCC in increasing their service segment to Alaska, and drafted the initial legislation that developed the state's policy towards telecommunications. After some time out to complete schooling, returned to join ARCO in 76 and have been with the North Slope Project Group since 1976. The last 3 years as the North Shore project manager in charge of all aspects of the construction activities at Poole Bay for Lake Richfield, which includes the full span of engineering, providing the various logistical material support, contract administration, accounting functions that it takes to run about the construction program, about $260 million a year, installing about $1 billion of worth of facilities on an annual basis. And I think I'll just stop there.
Representative Miller?
Commissioner Pace, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but no, being a new commissioner, you're taking over a pretty large department, and I know from business that being the top of it, you tend to like to have your own handpicked people in the top management position in business, and do you foresee that maybe replacement of some of the top management people in the department and with your own people that you have picked out, or what do you foresee in this area?
Well, I guess my answer might be a little bit of all of the above. Clearly, my responsibility to whatever employer that I have at this time is not to build an organization and when I leave that organization, take the organization with me. I'd be tickled to death if I could take with me about a dozen people that work with me on this project group that I built that organization up. I don't think a lot of people have an awful lot to offer anyone. I think that you may see a few people that worked with me in the past come into this department. I'd also be quick to add, though, that my impressions of the people within the department that are there and have been there for the last several years, that there are a lot of good people in that department. They are task-oriented people. They're concerned about doing a good job. They want to do a good job. I think it would be very responsive and supportive to new policy directions. Clearly, with the size of the department you alluded to, it would be very effective to come in here and with some close to 32 exempt positions or partially exempt positions attempt to start out with a brand new clean slate. It would not be, I don't think, effective administrative approach considering the tremendous momentum that exists in that department and that we need to sustain with about $1 billion worth of projects in-house So there's probably going to be a little bit of everything. There's going to be some new faces. There's going to be a new organizational alignment toward a line management approach as opposed to a functional management approach. And that's going to create some new positions as well as some new responsibility areas. And there's going to be some people that if we have a chance to continue to watch their performance and how they come along and respond to a shift in course that we're going to want to keep aboard and utilize the historical expertise that they bring to bear.
Representative Phillips?
Well, I'm going to go further down the ladder here. In the gubernatorial elections this past fall, some of the candidates were advocating the emphasis for DOT should be put in work on the streets and not so many planners. And I just want to get your philosophy or your mental frame of mind as far as how are you going to handle that for the next couple, 3 years as far as putting work on the streets. Are you going to employ more people to actually contract work out instead of planning and design or whatever? I just want to get a general philosophy.
Okay. I think the first emphasis is going to be on getting clearer accountability as to where we stand relative to the kind of scheduling and cost targets we set for ourselves. I'm very used to that. I'm used to the project engineer establishing a schedule for design, that fits with the intent of the legislative expectations and the executive branch's desires, and maintaining the continuity of reporting on how he's come along relative to that original schedule. And I'm used to having a very clear, and I shouldn't say I'm used to, but I think the most private sector is a very clear and unswerving linkage between what is funded for a particular project and what is being spent for that particular project. I think half of the problem is getting a clear, consistent accountability system in place that the management of the department can look at and hold people accountable to, as well as we can readily be responsive to inquiries from the legislature to where we do stand on the project relative to where we should stand. That's my, I think we can tell you today anything you want to know about a project in terms of the actual, if you will, what, where the project is and what the current costs are. My concern is we ought to tell you relative to what we said a year ago we were going to do, relative to our original schedule for that project and original milestones. And that accountability system then naturally leads to the next concern, and that is delivering a product in a timely and cost-effective fashion. Because once you get the visibility relative to the accountability, then the pressures begin to be brought to bear on the deviations. In terms of who does the work, I must say that I am more used to a greater amount of engineering work being contracted than currently is done by this department. And what the right balance is varies across a lot of organizations. Some organizations argue that the balance ought to be about 50-50. You need to have the in-house expertise and do enough engineering work that you can sustain that expertise so that you can make good judgment calls relative to what the contract design firms are able to do for you and how well they're performing and the development of the appropriate specs to monitor their performance and framework that performance. The organization just came from, we had no in-house design work. We had only people who were managing contract design.
Well, I just want to get on this planners versus, you know, people who actually do contract administration aspect of it. And I'll just use a particular example, which to bring a point across. It seems to me that, particularly in the area where I live and represent, Eagle River is booming, probably the fastest growing community in the state. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm always trying to, myself as a legislator, trying to react to that to try to predict what's going to happen in the future. But since we got all these planners, quote unquote, I'm not the one that's supposed to be reacting to that. I think, in my philosophy, DOT should be the one to come up with a plan, present it to me, and I'll try to implement it to take care of the traffic problem in that particular area that I mentioned. It always seems to me that I'm always, or I shouldn't say to myself, but our delegation is always the one as the advocate. Where I think DOT should be the one to present the plan and say, here's, we present, as legislators, present the problem. You guys should come in and say, here's the solution. One, two, or three, it's up to you which way you want to go with your home folks. But it seems to me that we're always coming in and saying, hey, you got to do something and nothing. And that's what I was getting at as far as the planners. If the planners are doing something, then they can come up with a solution. And we have a real problem, and you're aware of it.
Yes. I agree with what you'd like to see. I can't be articulate in terms of what is. I think there's probably two sides of the planning function. One is, if you will, is the planning of what projects make sense in the context of an overall plan or strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And then once a project is authorized, there is still some follow-up work that is required to make that go. I've always found in my participation with the major capital projects that we all tend to underestimate and underappreciate the stops that are required to go through to make a project go. You would think when you get the money into the capital budget that you ought to see something in the ground the next year. And it's highly frustrating to every, even to ourselves, much less the average citizen, as to why there isn't dirt being turned. I think that we need to do both. We need to be better visibility as to the function of planning so that people understand what the stops are that we have to go through, and get a better exchange and mutual understanding as to the role.
Okay, but the point I'm trying to emphasize here is that I think the planners should have the ability to anticipate what may happen 5 years down the pike and say, hey, you know, Legislator X, this is what's going to happen in your community. We want to make you aware of it. Here's some possible solutions so you can do something about it.
Roger.
But I'm, you know, it seems like we're always coming in and saying, hey, DOT, we got a problem. And we're not engineers, we're not designers, we're not planners, we're policymakers. And I think it's the role of DOT to come up with some recommendations so we can make those policies.
Well, I agree.
So, anyway, I just wanted to say my piece.
You understand that historically, and again, I feel I have a responsibility with the new governor to provide some new direction. On the other hand, I think it's very healthy that I'm not going to abandon ship here because it's important that while the effectiveness may come into question, the concern about the mission is very clear, and there are a hell of a lot of plans that the department has come up with on a regional and sub-regional basis. On Doc Phillips' room, in the attempt to do what you're talking about. Now, there's a question about whether or not, in terms of the plans they come up with, match the perception of needs and the part of the direction of needs in the community. But it involves a tremendous amount of community hearings, and maybe completing some traffic studies and 5-year plans of all sorts of transportation modes. But I can appreciate that we still have yet to get in sync in terms of the perception that that's adequate or that's on target, because there is a big gap between what the plans say we ought to be doing and what the budgets, after review of the legislature, in fact say we are doing. Well, I appreciate your
question.
Okay. Representative Lockyer, you were next.
I've already passed out to the new commissioner's backup material that I passed out to this committee. And for the record, I'm going to have him tell us what he plans to do about it. He told me privately. And we'll do that later. But I want to carry this a step further. Representative Phillips is striking a nerve in this state and in this community. And I need to already tell the new commissioner that he not very popular. I have attended many, many of the same public hearings that you're talking about. I have got to tell you that the staff has always been courteous, but nothing ever comes from it. I want you to know that I sat in 2 public hearings and stated to DOT staff that we have a very dangerous curve where we have an accident on a regular basis, probably monthly or even more often, on a new highway. And each and every time they wrote it down and said we would look into it. Sitting on the borough assembly, we have officially made the request that it be looked into. And it wasn't until I came to Juneau as a representative that I could call up the department. And it wasn't until the second call was made that I was told that now they are doing a safety review of this curve. Could give me no time frame as to results, but will get back to me. I've got to tell you that I don't have much faith, but the people in the Matt Gugurl and others like Randy tried very hard to get these people closer where they could reach you, because this is the frustration that builds up with their government. Now, in the material that I gave you today, you can see that for a long time, people have been very much aware that here's a problem that has to be solved. We've even gotten as far as the appropriators and everything else that goes with it. But I just need to tell you, Commissioner, that it's a long way from your hand to your nose, and we just don't want to have any more accidents. We don't want any more people killed while we're waiting for this thing to happen. And somewhere down in the ranks where the new
Well, I can't really tell you anything other than I will personally look into it and see if we're taking expeditious action to follow through on the agreement between the railroad and DOT to get the lights up.
We need to get back to it.
Representative McBride.
Well, I think part of this, and I'm glad that Barbara got to speak before I did, because I think Randy and Barbara are saying two different things, and I think therein lies the problem. Randy's saying that the planners in DOT need to do their planning and come to him and say, this is what you guys need. You're saying that we got a problem and we address the problem and tell DOT about it and they don't do anything about it. And that's sort of, there's a balance there, and DOT has, and I agree with what you said, that DOT is probably the most frustrating department in all of our state government to work with, if you've had to work with it on a borough assembly level, and I'm assuming Randy's had to work with it for some time on the state representative level. In my time served on the borough assembly, we've asked DOT, just like you said, and that's a response from the community. And we've got on 5-year plans and 3-year plans and no answers and, you know, several things like that. Yet on the other hand, if they go out and they're looking at your community and the places where they're responsible, and they come to you and they say, this is what we think, come to Randy and say, this is what we perceive as you need, and somebody says, well, that crazy outfit, look at the curve in the road, and they haven't done a darn thing about that, and they're coming here telling me that we need a new street light, you know. So,
if I may just respond, you missed something, Representative McBride. I'm saying that this large planning process that's going on isn't fulfilling the obligation. Somewhere, all this information that comes into this isn't getting upstairs and being implemented. It's only when you reach from the top as a representative with a big stick, and that's the wrong thing to do. DOT shouldn't have to react to representatives. This planning process and information should move up as it comes from the people, and that's what I'm saying. It's not happening.
Might I interject here with a question for the commissioner that might help on this? How do you find the present managed information system in your short time at DOTPF? Is it adequate? Is it reaching down? Is it doing what it's supposed to be doing?
Well, Madam Chairman, I guess that I answer in two ways. One is, I really do not think I understand what is in place, and it would not be fair for me to comment on the merits of what is in place. I have seen enough to know that there are some additional things that we need. Now, those additional things relative to what's in place and how much of a change, is it 50% change, 100% change, or 10% change, it's presumptuous at this juncture for me to make that kind of value judgment. I am listening and learning in terms of the perceptions, and I have clearly discovered that in many phases of this department's activity, that at a minimum, we have a tremendous perception problem. Assuming that all the systems are beautiful and that anybody who got into them said that they were just right and you couldn't improve on them, there still is a tremendous perception. So that assuming that everything is right, we have a hell of a task in front of us as a department in explaining the functions and the conflicts and the limits and the positive things that have been done by this department in a lot of areas. And I think all of us would readily agree that everything is improvable. So I would surely not attempt to say that I'm satisfied, but I wouldn't want to make any assessment about what's in place at this juncture.
perhaps before we go on further, we could ask you on an overview, just the short time that you, and I know you were working even before you were sworn in. What is your main goal for the department as commissioner? Or series of goals?
I guess the main goal would be that before I leave this department, the department is perceived as an effective department. I don't say that just because of what's being said. I say that because of what my personal background is all about. Now, there's a whole series of sub-goals that go along with becoming known as an effective department. Cannot become effective if you don't have clear accountability. That's highly visible. You cannot become effective if you don't have a good aggressive public relations. And relations both in terms of relations with the legislature and relations with the public. I confronted a problem yesterday in the House Finance Committee that is related to the ferry system that you, some of you all have probably read in the newspaper today. But I come to find out that there have been some dramatic changes as it relates to hiring hall practices with the union. And the statement of certain representatives was factually incorrect. But the perception was there, and part of that reason is because the perception among even some of the employees in the system was as reflected by the representative concerned. So in some cases, it's getting the story out to the employees and the story out to the public as to what the current posture, position, or procedure, or attitude of the department really is, so that the public can sense those changes and get the right sort of.
Representative Smith,
I had a couple questions. Coming from the private sector and never worked in government, to the best of my understanding, I mean, you've not been in engineering and design or construction business with the government before, have you?
Not with the government, no.
I'm encouraged with your what appears to be approach with regard to delivery of product and accountability. One area that I think concerns me is particularly in the area of architectural engineering and contracting for those services into the private sector, because when you look at almost any of our major projects, some of the major costs associated with them is down to this architectural engineering aspect of it. And it's a little hard for me sometimes to see how we continually carry on this fixed fee for architectural and engineering. Have you ever looked into that and seeing whether or not there is a way that we could turn that around and that we can get more bang for our buck when we go out into the engineering and architectural business? Similar to what happens in the private sector where they negotiate down cost.
You're talking about the fee that's charged by AEs, or are you talking about the fee that's charged by the department? The fee that's charged by the AEs, the contracting meeting. Well, I guess there are two ways to approach that. One, of course, is the negotiations in terms of the actual fee that's charged by the AEs. You can or cannot, make some inroads there, and quite frankly, I don't know where we stand in that process within this department. I think the most important area in which you make money, bottom line, is better visibility as to what the AEs are delivering for a certain number of dollars. And what, in the case of subsequent engineering or construction contract packages that are generated by the AEs, what the rate of design changes are that are experienced by the contracting company when they go to implement the AEs work. And in the private sector, there are a whole bunch of measures that we use to gauge rates of change relative to particular AE firms and how well they completed the design package. You can have an AE firm that will put you out 2 miles of road for very low cost, and you can get 100% overrun in the construction contract bid, and the guy does 5 contracts a year and drives a Cadillac around, because he makes a lot of money on the changes, and the actual bottom line cost of the product doesn't make any sense. There are ways amazing, which is here similar to what I just experienced. We have a lot of repeatability of projects. It's not like we're building a road one year in Siberia and a processing plant the next year in Wisconsin, and the two hardly are comparable. We have a lot of comparability in the projects that we undertake in this department, like we've experienced in the last 6 years in the North Slope. And there are ways in which you can make comparisons of unit cost and unit yield. What's a mile of road cost us? You know, what's a square foot of office space? There are distinctions clearly, but you begin to bracket what you're talking about. What are the rate of change orders experienced by a contract when it's a lump sum contract? And what is the norm that you're shooting for? And when those deviations occur, how do you focus your attention on looking at the deviation? I can't answer you at this juncture whether or not the problem is the fee level, or the problem is the product, or is the product the proficiency that we get out of it. We'll be looking at both. There are some comparators in fee. You know, I'm used to having charts that look at AE firms and make timeline comparisons. So it's very visible who's charging what fee and what the norm is and who's deviating from the norm, high or low, and what that means to us. My first goal is to get that accountability system and get the visibility of those kind of comparators, and then I think things begin to take the normal course. When those kind of visibilities are there and you have deviations, there are a lot of natural human reactions to those kind of deviations that begin to occur to address the problems. Right now, I don't feel comfortable with the accountability system even in the world.
Can I follow that, just to follow up on that?
Yes, Representative Booth is next.
And that's what I thought I heard you saying when you're talking about accountability, because I'm in a little bit of contracting in the business myself, so I worked around it for a number of years, and I've seen a lot of it come and go. You're probably not up on the contract procedures for the state entirely yet, but many times people, particularly in for our constituency, get into saying, well, competitive bidding, but there's drawbacks to competitive bidding many times. I'll probably follow up that sometime in the future and see whether or not we can't do some realistic looking at negotiated bidding processes versus competitive bidding processes and see some of the cost benefits that we may be able to derive from that. But have you had any chance at all to look at that?
No, but I've had a lot of experience with the concept. And you'll find me sympathetic in one sense to your concern and very unsympathetic. I think there are ways in which the contract RFPs can be worded that you leverage your quality ingredient to ensure the protection from the lowballer. Either expects to make a lot of money on the change orders, or has the expectation by virtue of either his expectation or prior experience that he can lowball the bid and deliver you a low quality product in the process. On the other hand, sole source negotiations and negotiated bid process, I shy away from very strongly because I am very concerned. We have the type of bidding restrictions we have in the public sector, and we've seen this in the private sector too, that whatever bidding process we have in contracting process, that I will go to extremes in terms of how I personally handle the business and I expect my managers to handle the business, that sends a clear signal that it is a fair process. And it is a process beyond reproach. Sole source negotiations have a lot of risks in those areas. So I appreciate that the low dollar not necessarily is the best dollar, and it's not the best use of dollars, and that we need to be real sensitive to that. On the other hand, I'm very concerned that whatever process we adopt is perceived by everyone as a very clear process.
Representative
Booth. What I'm getting is, what I'm pleased about is we've got him on the hot seat. Just got in here, and I think it's kind of unfair to be asking the type of questions in some ways that we have been asking him, and he's dancing around, and I'd be dancing too. But I'm pleased to see that he's going to use his business acumen as a business, as a profit loss company that he's been working for, to use these practices in the bureaucracy that we have. I'm encouraged very much that you're going to not sit in your big office and let things happen below without knowing what's happening and holding your managers and those down below that accountable and responsible. And I think if we can do that in the Department of Transportation, which has been probably one of our most complex and confusing departments, because the public is screaming. Comparatively speaking, Commissioner, I think you're aware of that. If you look at what the number of employees that have been handled in the transportation department and the number of projects that are out on the street, I don't think there's a hell of a lot of comparison there. We wonder, in this committee, we have, and Mr. Representative Phillips has been here longer than I have, and we're still into the same damn problem and get no place. You pull one snake out and five take its place. Well, it's a multi-headed animal that just can't get a hold of. And it's only incumbent upon the direction and the manager and the leader, if you will, to solve the problems of the people, not necessarily ours, but yours, because you are people, I think. But I'm very pleased that you're going to use the everyday profit and loss picture. There is a profit and a loss in the lower right-hand corner, even in bureaucracy. And I think you're going to practice that. I mean, that's where you come from. And I personally, and I'm sure I could speak for the committee too, that we're encouraging you and we will help you in any way we can to bring this thing into a more organized situation so that everybody knows what's happening, including you. I mean, I think that's where the problem lies. So you're to be complimented by holding into that. I hope you don't get caught up in the bureaucracy of this thing, because that seems to be a disease one picks up after a while. So again, I'm very happy to hear the statement you made.
I hope that we will adjourn about 25 till. As I said, this was a light overview. We intend to have Commissioner Casey back before us for a real grilling before too long. Representative Locker was first in the state.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, Madam Chairman, that you actually schedule that in a time frame that we can all live with, like 2 months. And actually, so that we can hear back from the commissioner that what he has found, what he is doing, because I think we're all extremely concerned. And I'm not as trusting yet, I want to be sure that he comes back to us.
I think it'll probably be prior to 2 months.
Thank you.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think part of the problem, or some of the problems that have existed, and that Randy has talked about, and Barbara has talked about, it has to do with decentralizing DOT. And just because it's a long ways down to Juneau and through all the different hoops. And I know that's something that Governor Sheffield campaigned on. I know that's something that a lot of people looking for and interested in where you're moving in that direction, and I'm not going to put you on the spot. I think you've been dancing pretty good myself. but I know that is a concern. It's a concern by a number of the people in the legislature. Fairbanks, I'm from Fairbanks, and there's been some good people out there, and there's been people who are less than good. So we're, as a community, are interested in how you move in that direction.
Is there any further business come before the committee? All right, committee is adjourned.